Okay, now, so I'm joined by a guest with a very special story. I'm joined by Timothy Cho, and Timothy joins us as he's living in Denton at the moment, but originally you were born in North Korea, weren't you, Timothy? So do you want to tell us, how long have you lived in Denton, first of all?
It's not long, actually. Mm-hmm. My family and I moved into Denton in March. Mm. Yeah, so it's been about 6 months, actually.
6 months, and what drew you here?
I love it, and community and people are very kind and hospitable, and I love it. And also, I've been living in Northwest England for 13 years, actually. Wow. So before I moved into Denton, I was living in Redditch South.
It's
all around between Redditch and Denton, actually.
But the interesting bit, isn't it? You were North Korea originally, so obviously people might read things in the news about North Korea. What's your story? When were you born there?
I often say this, and it's been a long journey from escaping from North Korea. It is almost impossible to able to come to UK from North Korea because people do not have a passport, or they don't even know what a passport means living in North Korea. And complete information blockaded they have, their eyes closed, their ears are blocked, and their movement is completely restricted. And even from between Manchester and London, when you are living in North Korea, you need a travel document and permission from authorities in order to travel to another location. So having this life, I mean, coming to the UK and Denton, I can't hide how much I am grateful, you know, for having this democratic opportunity. I mean, we often describe, of course, democracy is not perfect, but this has more than that notions within the word democracy itself, because someone like myself, and I ended up living on my own after my parents escaped when I was still quite a young boy, and I grew up without parents' love. I didn't even know how to express and react of that feeling, you know, which you grow up with parents, and parents encouraging you to do something, and also that love, recognize who you are yourself. To be honest, I didn't know who I was. I remember one of the last times I saw my mother on a train, and she was waving at me, and I never thought that was going to be the last time. And well, after 9 years, I was seeing my father. I didn't even know he in front of me was my father. And even if I knew he was my father, I definitely didn't know how to express what I could call out. Because living without parents and grew up, I have to say I survived. Mm-hmm. And particularly in the 1990s, in North Korea, had over 3.5 million of starvation. And after Soviet collapse, when other communist countries all collapsed going through, but North Korea, instead of they were going to choose open the doors, they went into complete isolation. It was inevitable to cause all this starvation of millions of people. And during that period, as well, I survived. And it was inevitable to know who I was or myself to find out. But past the 13 years where I've been living in the UK, including all Denton, you know, until today, and I'm so grateful to, or proud even myself to express that I discovered who I am today and what I love and care about, what I stand for, democratic constitutional values of freedom of faith and expression and speech and opportunity. If that democracy doesn't mean have any opportunity, I couldn't come and overcome all this way. I was able to learn my English, go to school, college, and universities, where I studied two political degrees in Northwest Regional University. I must say one of the best universities, Salford University in Manchester and Liverpool University. And I can't hide it. The feeling of when I was getting my degree, you know, on that day, how much I was proud of myself, but also I was quite in tears, because if my parents were there, saw that moment, I'm sure they would have said, "So proud of you." But people and community, since I come to UK, have been kind of my family, you know, the church community, local community, and neighbors. Someone who even couldn't speak any English, you know, they kindly approached and tried to look after and take care of me. And where I become today and integrated into this community and society in the UK and Denton, and that's why I always describe myself. And I can and say, you know, I cannot thank you enough.
How old were you when you left North Korea, and how did you manage to, because it's not as easy as going to an airport and getting on a plane, is it?
No.
How did you manage to get out?
So most of, we only have 35,000 North Korean SKPs have managed arriving in democracies. And I am grateful to the people of United Kingdom and the government also that we have 670 North Korean SKPs in the UK. So it is the second largest North Korean diaspora community after South Korea. But the journey is very, very tough and dangerous because we cannot cross into South Korean border directly because they have over 2 million landmines. But Korean War was very severe. UK was the second largest country. We provide over 11,000 military troops, and we have the largest casualties after Second World War. And this war often we describe a forgotten war, and we still need to bring over 700 UK soldiers who buried, you know, in the part of North Korea. What they fought was for democracy, which today South Korea has become a prosperous country. You know, when you look at Samsung, Hyundai, all these mobile phones, we are proudly using it, democratic technology, and people are able to enjoy their freedom and opportunities. But North Korea half side still can't do it. So this journey for North Korean SKPs, they usually cross the border into China, and from China into one of the East Asian countries. It can be Cambodia, Malaysia, and Vietnam, Mongolia. And all these countries, through, they finally able to go to a democratic country. But there is no guarantees. Many of them are being killed or arrested by Chinese government and authorities and then send them back to North Korea. That is one of the reasons in North Korea today we have over 300,000 political prisoners because those who were sent back. So my journey was all the same. That way of the path I was following, I was escaped twice, and during that period, I was imprisoned four times in China and North Korea, and I still got, you know, some the horrific, an act of humanity what I witnessed in front of my eyes. Even myself, I have some scars, torture scars on my body, but all I was trying, all these North Koreans tried to do, to go to the notion of democracy, because North Korea is very dark. It is the darkest country. I don't have to describe too much about it, because when you see on the Google satellite, you can see how dark it is in that country. They try to make a coerced equality. This country, what we call the socialism or communist country, classless society, but that is all exaggerations, actually. They try to put all these 25 million people in prison systems and let them wear, you know, same clothes and same hairstyles and same mind. If you don't follow it, then you are put end up in a prison camp. So that is not something what it meant to be ideologically followed society. It ends up with totalitarian regime itself. Never imagined that I could even join political party in North Korea. But today I am proud that was able to choose one of the political parties in democratic country in UK, which I am a member, one of the member of the party. And I would happy to even say a bit more about it. But that kind of opportunity in North Korea is absent completely.
Well, we're going to come to that. So some people might recognize your name from last couple of months ago, the election. So you stood as a conservative candidate, sorry, in Denton South, didn't you? So I want to ask, obviously you studied two political degrees.
I did.
Did your time in North Korea drive you towards pursuing politics?
No, I actually never thought about studying in politics.
Okay.
I wanted to become a dentist, actually. So even A-level, I studied medicine, medical health professions. However, and following that course to become a dentistry and dentist, I wasn't sure what my heart was actually desire for, and I wanted to find out why North Korean people or these people who are living under totalitarianism or authoritarian or dictatorship have to be victim and victimizations. So convert into politics, it was difficult. However, it was opening my eyes to see the causal of the victimization and victims of these millions of people. It is a beautiful country. Are people smart? If they have free environment, it could have done same DNA as South Korea to become developed country today. But I'm sure they have a potential to develop, prosperous in the future when change it comes someday. So politics, studying politics in the UK, it was really opening my eyes, particularly understanding of also democratic society. It is not perfect society always, but it is the least of the notion provide opportunity. And it is upon the fundamental and democratic constitutional values of what I needed, that, you know, the basic opportunities.
Okay, absolutely. So how much did you enjoy standing as a candidate? Was it an eye-opener? Obviously, you've studied, but this is the true meaning of it, isn't it?
I think the straight feeling of standing for a democratic election was a humble experience, I could definitely say. So regardless I was elected or not, but being standing in this election, someone come from, you know, even a homeless background who grew up without parents and never knew who he himself was about because of the brainwashed and indoctrinated education he was forced to learn about it. But express yourself, you being democratic citizen, in particular representing for a community, you know, this was a hugely humble experience and privileged opportunity, I could say. And even this was my, you know, only experience I ever had even in my life. I would definitely say, and this was more than anything what I experienced, you know. I received a lot of support messages from people around the world. Number of people from Iran, in Iranian refugees and living in the UK, they texted me saying it was just an encouraging story that you were born in one of the most darkest and totalitarian prison society, all the way to come to UK standing, you know, for a democratic election. Just the story itself, it symbolizes how much we can do think about in the future for our restore our village and homes and country someday, you know.
One of your colleagues, Dan Costello, mentioned to me quite a funny story about when you've been out canvassing and knocking on doors and people tell you that they don't vote. How does that make you feel?
Obviously, it makes me feel quite sad. It's sad. Look in Burma, what has been happening, people. For this single ballot paper, people are dying. And even in the UK, I mean, having studied in politics, we knew how this, you know, the ballot and suffragette and how they've been standing and fighting for this, their ballot paper. It's been more than 100 years, obviously. That's why generations comes and maybe they get some complacent or because of politics keeps, you know, to criticize one another. Maybe they get little, you know, I'm sick of it. But the fundamental key notion of the ballot paper, it means it hasn't changed. And I'm hoping more people would participate in the future elections, because for this ballot paper, countries like in North Korea and Burma and other Hong Kong, look at what's been happening in Afghanistan and Syria, and all these countries, they can't have this privilege. This is a voice of democratic citizen.
You have a unique perspective on it, don't you, having experienced life without the ballot paper?
Absolutely, yeah. I would definitely stand for this ballot paper with all my life, yeah.
What, obviously, you're involved in local politics now. What difference do you want to make locally for your family, your neighbours, people that live in your area? What difference do you want to make?
Local is my home community, isn't it? It can be your home community, my home community, and everyone's home community. And we want to have our areas safe, clean, and green, And also with that, all that process of leaving the community, we have to look after, you know, while we're living it. And so this community is significant, and particularly the growing of new generations, let them continue able to explore where they are, you know, hometown and home area, to talk about it when they go outside. So, but obviously, there are a number of problems and issues as well, because every community obviously is not perfect. Mm. Maybe that's one of the reasons why we have local politicians or councillors who are represent, and their role is particularly I'm trying to look out where those elderly people are and where these single parents and children who are in struggle as well. Mm. Or when you look at, you know, the speeding and some young people who drive quite fast and furiously, that's very dangerous for kids. Because even myself have a little daughter, you know, walk on the road. I can't allow them to play on the road. It's dangerous. So that kind of safety net, that is in the hands of the community. And politicians, local politicians, not obviously they do this work, but they are spot out when the issues are happening, and then consult with the community and people and how we can fix it. And then you go on to represent at the council and express what my area and what issues are. So that's how it has to be, kind of a social engineering system means. I compare with the car MOT systems, you know. So we need MOT every 6 months or maybe every 12 months, you know. And however, if in order to your car runs well, we keep have to an eye on it. So it could be same the metaphor of the community itself. Because we cannot be complacent, because today is a peace and everything is okay. That doesn't mean tomorrow is going to be that. We just keep have to eye on it, like how we you know, keep eye on our car. Yeah, otherwise, the car doesn't work well. You know,
that's a lovely metaphor, definitely. So I know recently you were over in Denmark, was it, doing some talking? Is that something that you still engage in? Obviously, as a North Korean, someone that's left, do you find it important to share your experiences?
I do. So in September, I had two quite privileged opportunities, invited by Faroe. Ireland, a small island, and also Denmark. Just I got home only 2 days ago. In Denmark, in the past 7 or 8 days, I probably spoke to over 2,500 people.
Wow.
And I spoke at universities, colleges, and churches, at parliament, and groups and individuals. It is definitely one way or another. Because we live in democratic society, that doesn't mean our democracy is guaranteed for granted, you know, something is going to happen and be there for all the time, because it does not come from an arbitrary. When we look at outside at the moment, there are many parts of democratic, you know, the territory is fall into darkness. If I may use even this word, the tragedy in part of the countries are happening right now. The figures and statistics, when I look at it, around 340 million people are being persecuted and living in the suffering. I mean, one of the cases is because they are simply follow their, you know, religious faith, and that persecution comes. It shouldn't be wrong because we attend church, we attend mosque, we attend, you know, other religious faith, because that's freedom of fundamental choice they can do. But because of what they do so, and they are being persecuted and end up in prison, or some of them even killed. The figures have increased. Only 2 years ago, we only had about 240 million.
Mm.
And 2 years after, it becomes 340 million. If we go next year, that figure will go up again and again.
So we always have to be careful.
Yeah, the graph is going up in the meantime. Mm. The persecution and oppression level is going up, while the democratic citizens who are speaking on behalf of these people, actually, the graph it goes down.
It's a worrying trend, yeah.
We are. So we need to wake up, particularly I with the early young generations. Having said, our freedom is not come from an arbitrary. So it is something we have activated this, you know, from our grandparents' generation, that we are continue having in that mode, because it is not something best or you just come and get award, you know.
We have to continue to fight for it.
Absolutely. So that was my key message, you know, to raise awareness of what are happening around those countries. And also we must encourage those refugees and immigrants, let them able to restore of their villages and their towns and their homes and country where they don't have to escape again following generations. That's the way of solutions we have to look at further, you know. Because currently there are 82 million refugees, according to UN refugee the statistics. They walk around, they have no home. They're being forced to leave their homes from war and conflict and persecution. It is very sad.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think my final question is, the support from other people that have left North Korea, what's the community like there? Is it quite a tight-knit community?
Living in the UK.
And are you in touch with anyone living internationally, things like that?
We do, because it's a small community. Yeah. We are staying in touch with each other. And most of those people are living in London, actually, because in London, they have about 50,000 South Koreans. So it's quite interesting, unique experience when I look at it. Because North Korea and South Korea is currently divided because of the ideological, you know, division and also the fence which used to Germany had. But in London, now they come to living in the UK, democratic country, where peace harmonized. And these people between South and North Koreans live together in the same community. And they get along. They support each other. And they talk because we speak same language. This is very interesting, you know, experiment when I look at it, although it is only around the 670s. In Manchester, we have few families, including myself, but most of them are living in London. But they all settled down. When I look at them, I find them so proud of that. See, Koreans could have become one of those DNAs, could have developed, you know, country, become prosperous economically and socially and culturally, like what South Korea today becomes. That gives me hope what North Korea will become in the future.
Absolutely. I think that's lovely, Timothy, and I think that was quite an interesting way to end it. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.